Chapter 6, An Affair of the Heart, continuing with a 9-step program for a healthy heart. With these opportunities in mind, we'd like to propose an amalgam of what we consider to be the 9 best-proven effective steps to lower the risk of heart disease and promote a healthy living wellness lifestyle. In so doing, we readily acknowledge this kind of program does not originate in this work. There are a number of excellent wellness plans extant with 8, 9, or a dozen different points in them. All of them, like this one, have merit. What we are doing by establishing this one is encouraging you at least to get a plan, use it as a guideline, and do everything you can to stick to it. Ultimately, your life could depend upon it. Step 1. Learn the value of a proper diet. One that is high in fiber, low in fat, high in fresh foods, low in processed, fast, and preservative-laden foods. One that is high in fresh, water-bearing foods such as fruits, vegetables, and that is low in fat, particularly high LDL cholesterol fat such as red meat, dairy, and eggs. If you're going to eat meat, it's best to eat more fish and fowl. Best bet? Deep water, saltwater fish. These contain essential omega-3 fatty acids that may aid in the lowering of LDL cholesterol. Eat as many fresh fruits and vegetables as possible and cut down on processed foods. Sorry for you lovers of Hamburger Helper and SpaghettiOs, but most processed foods have enough artificial preservatives in them to start a chemistry lab. It is now a proven fact that fresh is by far the best way to go. Fresh, preferably raw, water-bearing foods like fruits and vegetables. At least 60 to 70% of your diet should contain these vital, phytochemically rich foods. Step 2. Eliminate sugar entirely. Yes, there are some good forms of sugar like maple syrup and honey. But the sugar under discussion here is good old granulated sucrose, popularly known as sugar. In any form, it's a villain. At best, it creates useless calories and prompts tooth decay. At worst, it prompts diabetes, hypoglycemia, and a host of other concomitant ailments. In countries where the intake of sugar has increased, there has been a proportionate rise of diabetes. There are now also indications that proportionate rises in cancer and heart disease also accompany this element's introduction into various world societies. Sugar substitutes are okay in moderation, but some of those carry carcinogenic implications. Frankly, it's a minefield, so tread carefully. Best bet, eat more fresh fruit and foods sweetened with natural fruit juice. Step 3. Be sure to take some kind of daily vitamin supplementation, and now acknowledge cholesterol inhibitors such as garlic and aloe vera. Recent U.S. government surveys have determined it is all but impossible to get a full day's nutrition from the standard urban American diet. Certainly some intelligent, comprehensive vitamin and mineral supplementation is recommended, but don't fall into the trap of relying solely on supplements to carry the load. You can't go out and eat a fast food fat burger, fatty fries, a chili dog, and 2 pieces of lemon pie and expect your vitamins and minerals to do the job. Fresh foods are essential to complete the 1-2 health punch for this plan. In addition, there are now some indications that natural food elements such as garlic and more recently aloe vera offer arterial plaque-fighting capabilities. In a recent evaluation, wellness doctor Dean Ornish recommended a combination of garlic, aloe vera, in its ACE mannan molecule, and a low-fat macrobiotic diet for its pronounced abilities to aid the body in cleansing itself, in lowering LDL cholesterol levels, and in restoring immune system functions. Step 4. No smoking. In case you've been on another planet for the last 10 years and haven't read the warning labels, the U.S. Surgeon General has determined that smoking can and will cause cancer and heart disease. Step 5, alcohol. Forget the good news. First of all, don't come near the stuff if you're an expectant mother. That's a given. And we've all heard the wonderful stories from France about how red wine can actually help your heart, and moderate amounts of alcohol every day can lower the risk of heart disease. Those studies fail to mention that many types of alcohol actually raise levels of arterial plaque, and all alcohol over 3 ounces a week drastically increases the risk of cancer. Best bet, take an aspirin and lay off the booze. Step 6, avoid environmental pollutants. Remember, every toxin in our lives in great enough quantity eventually works its way into our bloodstream and into our cardiovascular system. Since the air we may be breathing and the water we drink for over 120 million of us may be unhealthy, it is important to buy a workable household water system that filters out chlorine and heavy metals. It's also important to get a quality bacteriostatic air filter that filters out 95% of air pollutants inside the house. Step 7, the importance of keeping fit. No, you don't have to participate in a triathlon or bench press 400 pounds in reps of 10. Nevertheless, it has now been recognized that regular exercise and physical fitness are second only to good nutrition as the single most important aspect of maintaining a healthy body and a healthy heart. The main thing is to choose an exercise that is right for you, one that you can enjoy, but also one that will get your cardiovascular endurance up. Without trying to set a fitness regimen here, a good rule of thumb for minimal fitness would be at least 30 minutes of aerobic exercise at a minimum of 3 times a week. Step 8. Reduce uncontrolled stress and get plenty of rest. It has now been determined that positive stress, what is commonly called eustress, might actually be good for you. That's the kind of stress that athletes undergo in the heat of competition, politicians feel when they're making campaign speeches, or people experience when they're working on a project that really excites them. We also understand the negative stress brought about by overworking, prolonged tension, and ongoing dysfunctional personal experiences can be hazardous to your health and could eventually even kill you. There are a number of stress reduction factors that are known to work for you. Improved diet, exercise, and plenty of rest are all important in the maintaining of proper stress balance. Sleep deprivation, by the way, is now being examined as a primary hazard of the coming generation. We all apparently need more sleep than we realize. Step 9. Drink plenty of water and at least 4 ounces a day of aloe vera. Water may be the most overlooked aspect of good health. In proper quantities, it helps maintain weight balance, flush the body of toxins, and keep our digestive system in top running order. At least a half gallon a day of water is recommended for the maintenance of good health, but the important thing here is to drink water that has been properly filtered. As far as the aloe vera is concerned, every study we have seen and every patient application to which we have been exposed indicates that aloe vera, when consumed as a drinking gel, has absolutely positive effects on the human system. Summary. In a way, this chapter has been a revelation for all of us, in that there doesn't seem to be a pathology against which this remarkable healer can at least be helpful as an adjunct. And in the case of heart disease and atherosclerotic complications, it appears to exhibit its greatest strength as a gentle stabilizer and rehabilitative influence in all aspects of treatment, recovery, and reduction of toxins. It is our hope and belief that more practitioners will follow the lead of O.P. Agarwal and take aloe's remarkable qualities to the next level of curative potential. Chapter 7, Creature Care. I begin this chapter by acknowledging a debt of gratitude, not to the men of science and medicine who have so devotedly and generously given of their time and energy to bring about so many major advances in the studies of aloe vera. That's a given. Rather, we give it to some accomplices to the healing plant's success and rapid rise to respectability. I mean the animals, both in laboratories and in field practice, who have been so valuable in the establishing of aloe's credibility throughout the world. Whether they have been the unwitting agents of its respectability or relatively sentient beings aware of their participation in the process is a matter of controversy that will no doubt rage for years and, I might add, without probable resolution. I personally happen to believe that the truth lies somewhere in between, that the awareness of the animal resides in direct proportion to the intelligence of the animal. Don't expect much empathy, for example, from a frog. By the same token, a dog, a cat, or a rhesus monkey might be aware of the procedure and, on some occasions, debatably, a cognizant agent in the process of both healing and even experimentation. I come to that belief for a number of reasons. Principal among them was a book I co-authored in 1985 on the holistic treatment of animals and the specific use of aloe vera as the treatment of choice for literally hundreds of animal pathologies. The book was called Creatures in Our Care, and it remains the only completely definitive work ever written on the use of aloe vera in the treatment of every kind of creature, from tigers to parakeets. When working on the development and research of it with one of my co-authors, Richard Holland, an exceptionally gifted and somewhat outspoken veterinarian, I was privileged to see many animals in his practice who were actively participating in helping to treat other animals. A dog who was an active blood donor, a cat who acted as a surrogate mother for kittens and puppies, a chicken who was a willing sweet mate to a recovering bird dog. In all these cases, there existed a consciousness of participation that cannot be denied. And it helps us to gain further appreciation of the fact that we share this planet with some very exceptional creatures over whom we have been granted dominion to care for, partner with, help, yes, and learn from, not just exploit. We bring these up as examples of the degrees to which animals can be aware of the process to which they are a party. It is also a preface to the belief that no animal experimentation should be undertaken unless it is absolutely necessary. And I personally feel that torturous and painful lab experiments made on animals just to satisfy someone's intellectual curiosity is cruel, unfortunate, and should be abolished. A bit of veterinary history. As far back as the Vedic texts in 5th century BC India, it was emphasized that much could be learned in the treatment of animals as keys to education in the treatment of humans. The Greek physician, philosopher Pythagoras, acknowledged as the first ardent proponent of homeopathy, was also the founder of the first animal humane society in recorded history. And one of the most thoroughgoing and respected physicians of his time, the Arab Ibn al-Baytar, derived from ancient writings and created on his own no less than 1,700 different herb and plant formulations for the treatment of animals. In this hemisphere, one of the first recorded uses of aloe vera for internal treatment in animals was in Jamaica in the 17th century, where horse aloes were often used to treat horses for colic, as well as being used as a poultice. In a broad context, veterinarians have a Pandora's box of pathologies with which to contend that are even more varied and challenging than those facing the MD. It is often overlooked that although the creature Homo sapiens is the most complex and intricate machine on this plane of life, any practitioner trying to treat maladies among other creatures must confront, diagnose, analyze, treat, and try to heal diseases that occur in a dozen different species, some of them in the same day. Still, there are principles of practice that cross-cut all areas of medical treatment, accompanied by the belief that, laced with good judgment and proper training, there are few limits to what conscientious healers can do. So this chapter serves as a salute to their good work, even more than the creatures they care for. Both have availed us of exceptional new insights into the role aloe vera plays in the healing arts. Out of necessity and true to the overriding theme of this book, we will continue the work of our friends in the veterinary field on what are considered primarily systemic and internal conditions in animals. For the sake of order, we will cover them according to animal categories. And for the sake of brevity, we will cover only the general categories of animals most frequently treated. No iguana skin spot remedies here. Horses. Of all the animals with whom man deals on a regular basis, horses are among the most complex in that they don't always respond to treatment in the same ways. And as opposed to other stock animals such as swine, sheep, and goats, who are bred primarily for one or two purposes, horses come in all breeds and are used for everything from high-performance thoroughbred racing to pulling a beer wagon. Racehorses, for example, are some of the finest athletes in the world and, like great athletes, have a number of problems that stem from a result of the demands of high performance. Others, like cow ponies, are like blue-collar workers who get pains and strains just like any other person on the job. One of the most astute observers and practitioners of the equine condition has been Dr. Alan Fredrickson, a veterinarian from Washington State. Having been a veterinarian in mixed practice for a number of years, he converted extensively to equine medicine during the later years of his practice and was acknowledged for his innovative uses of aloe vera in various modalities of treatment. Traditionally, one of the more frequently occurring conditions plaguing horses has been swollen joints. Although swollen joints are often the result of sprains or work-related strains, they can also come about due to systemic causes or be congenital in the horse's lineage. In all cases of application, Dr. Fredrickson used both topical and oral doses of stabilized, commercially processed aloe vera compounds first in deep rubs with aloe liniments, or as an alternative by applications of the plain lotion with wrappings of saran wrap, followed by cotton bandages soaked with aloe. Wraps were recommended to be changed daily and were accompanied by large oral doses of aloe vera drinking gel. He found in many cases that the combination of the regular systemic intake of the gel along with the aloe wrap worked best in treating this condition. Founder or laminitis is a common pathology that besets many horses and is quite often the result of too much of a good thing. Frequently, a horse, especially a young one with a voracious appetite, will partake of too much pasture grass, drink too much water when overheated, or most often will combine the two excesses. It can also be the result of retained placenta in mares. Since it is the result of toxic buildup in the system, founder, Dr. Fredrickson, discovered, was successfully treated in dozens of instances by flushing the horse's digestive system with massive doses of aloe vera drink. One of the side benefits of aloe is that it increases the appetite, and since appetite loss is often a manifestation of the disease, the aloe vera works in two ways, as a detox flush and as a surprisingly effective appetite enhancer. Horses are noted for being high-strung, and a broad rule of thumb applies in that the finer the breed of horse, the more often the mares are prone to be infertile. In the case of Dr. Fredrickson's treatments for infertility in mares, the sole common denominator of change was the introduction of aloe vera in large doses as an intrauterine infusion with a saline solution. This infusion was administered once a day for 5 days, then once a week for 12 weeks. In a number of instances of treatment, mares who were previously unable to foal were able to foal. We also note with interest that Diamond K Animal Care of Sulphur Springs, Texas, recommended the use of stabilized aloe vera injections ranging from 60 cc to 100 cc per injection to aid in the artificial insemination of mares, though no specific outcome for this kind of use was indicated. We propose that serious breeders proceed carefully here because it appears that the effectiveness of aloe vera as a sperm-inducing agent is directly proportionate to the pH balance set for the gel. At pH levels of 6 and above, it is a profoundly effective sperm enhancer. At levels of 3.4 and below, it has proved to be a strong spermicidal agent. One of the most influential advocates of aloe vera for internal uses has been a longtime racehorse owner, Larry Duffy. An owner of a stable of standardbred trotters out of Los Alamitos Racetrack in Southern California, Duffy first experimented by using aloe vera in nebulizers for his horses. Due to the demands of racing, the stress of travel, and constant changes of climate, racehorses can and do experience more than their share of respiratory complications. Nebulizers are bridle-like hoods that fit over the horse's nose and are the equine equivalent of oxygen masks for humans, except for the fact that warm medicated vapors are introduced while the horse is breathing. In the case of racehorses, it is used to prevent blockages and to ameliorate occasions of sore and bleeding throats. Working with a number of veterinarians, including Dr. Ed Hill, one of the California Racing Commission vets, Duffy explained his positive experiences with the healing plant and was able to encourage these professionals to use aloe vera for such conditions as blood in the urine, chronic diarrhea, and constipation. In most instances of treatment, Dr. Hill was able to determine that 4 to 8 ounces a day of aloe vera was an effective level of dosage to use until the condition was alleviated entirely. Dr. Hill went on to use stabilized aloe vera compounds in gel, jelly, and lotion form to treat such conditions as uterine infection in mares, dozens of cases of throat infections in trotters, including several chronic cases, and even a few cases of laryngitic hypoplasia. Another Duffy convert, Robert Baker, DVM, used aloe vera to treat a number of standardbred and thoroughbred racehorses for respiratory infections, including chronic coughs, a commonly found syndrome in horses known as follicular pharyngitis, an aggravation of the pharynx or larynx accompanied by pronounced fever. A student of the aloe applications of Dr. Alan Fredrickson, Robert Baker, like Fredrickson before him, found the aloe vera treatment to be very effective in the treating of these complex conditions. In his medical chronicles, however, Alan Fredrickson warns that, unfortunately, a good many people wait until the animal is too far gone and then suddenly want the vet to fix it. Nevertheless, Dr. Fredrickson noted that the aloe vera treatments did work to ameliorate such conditions as follicular pharyngitis, even in advanced cases. Cattle. As opposed to horse lovers, who are often in the business of horse breeding and racing as much for the love of it as for the profit, dairy farmers and cattle ranchers are primarily business people. They have to turn a profit or perish. And frankly, whatever your philosophical disposition toward them, cattle are viewed primarily as food factories, and there is generally little sentiment or fondness shared between man and animal. By the same token, cattlemen and dairymen have been among the most creative advocates of the use of aloe vera for the animals in their care. At the same time, they're aware of the need to keep their wards healthy. They're also conscious of the bottom line. In his Chronicles of Holistic Animal Care, my one-time writing partner, Dr. Richard Holland, was as much a specialist in bovine maladies as any vet in general practice could be. For that reason, some of his treatments of cows and cattle read like an educational primer in the use of stabilized aloe vera for bovine diseases. In covering Dr. Holland's work and those of others, we will again focus upon internal uses and diseases with internal origins that offer possible topical manifestations. Vaginal treatments for uterine infections are among the most frequent challenges for bovine veterinarians. That especially applies to a condition known as metritis. In fact, metritis occurs so commonly in cattle that all bovine uterine infections are often erroneously referred to by that term. Although uterine infections take a number of forms, metritis is most frequently shown to be an inflammation of the uterus accompanied by pus trapped in the uterine cavity. It's almost always a painful infection with nasty complications, the most pronounced of which can lead to the cow's loss of participation in the heat cycle. Particularly in the instance of dairy cows, the heat cycle, in other words, the cycle of mating, reproduction, and resultant lactation, is what keeps the cow a worthwhile investment and the dairy farmer in business. When that cycle is interrupted or stopped, cows get to be very expensive pets, and economic consequences can get to be disastrous. To complicate the issue further, there had traditionally been very few ways that are considered reliable treatments for metritis and other uterine infections. In his veterinary practice, Dr. Holland was able to successfully treat hundreds of cases of metritis, dozens of cases of prolapsed uteruses and averted uteruses, which occur during calving, and bruised or torn uterine cavities. Another veterinary practitioner and bovine specialist, Dr. Bob Corbett of El Paso, Texas, also found aloe vera to be highly effective in the treatment of uterine infections. Using his own formulation, combining stabilized aloe vera with vitamin C, allantoin, and potassium sorbate, Dr. Corbett has been able to treat thousands of cases of uterine infections very successfully. Diarrhea is a common malady afflicting many cattle and is frequently referred to as scours. And though it is a problem with adult cattle, the situation is seldom fatal. In very young baby calves, however, it takes an entirely different and more sinister meaning and can turn into a life and death struggle in a few days' time. Usually this takes place because dairy farms, hungry for profit and high milk output, will take calves off colostrum milk provided by their mothers after a day or not let them nurse at all when they really need at least 3 to 5 days to build up their systems. In a dozen cases of calf scours treated by Dr. Alan Fredrickson and in over 50 cases of calf scours treated by the Holland Veterinary Clinic, both doctors found that aloe vera juice administered orally 2 times a day helped flush the bowel of accumulated toxins, helps combat stress, and helps replace liquid nutrients and electrolytes often missing from the system. Dr. Fredrickson found his treatments were more effective when augmented with 10 cc of aloe vera juice or gel injected into the muscle for at least 3 days. In most cases of the scours treated, both veterinarians found that scours were greatly relieved and recovery was a fact. Even more sinister than scours are instances of baby calves of a disease called coccidiosis. Common in calves of 1 to 2 months of age, it seems to be a more common manifestation of animals confined to small pens. Symptoms of this dread disease are pronounced diarrhea and watery discharges with bloody fluids or clots of blood. The calf loses appetite, becomes gaunt, depressed, and often dies of the effects. In treating calves for this condition, Diamond K Animal Clinic of Sulphur Springs, Texas, found that by adding 2 ounces of aloe vera liquid, gel or juice, in twice daily doses for about 2 weeks, the coccidiosis could be turned around and incidences of reoccurrence could be lessened dramatically. One of the advantages of aloe vera over other medications and therapies is that when administered orally, it often acts as an appetite stimulant rather than an appetite suppressant. This bodes well for industries such as ranching, where weight gain and healthy stock are not only important but essential to the economic survival of the rancher. In fact, in one study, it was shown that by adding aloe vera drinking gel to the drinking water of just 50 dairy cows, one Texas dairyman was able to increase their milk production by as much as 3 pounds per day. That amounted to an average increase in net income of over $10,000 in 1 year from 50 cows. Other dairy farmers using aloe vera experienced similar results, so much so that aloe vera has, for years, been the food additive of choice for many Texas dairymen. Pigs. Pigs are distinct from other barnyard animals in that they are, A, far more intelligent, and because of that, B, more inclined to exhibit stress-related syndromes when forced to endure filthy living conditions or an unhealthy diet. In other words, one of the burdens of advanced intelligence seems to be the more frequent occurrence of stress. For that reason, porcine stress syndrome is one of the most common maladies. Our porcine friends are very much like humans in the way they respond to unpleasant living conditions, cramped quarters, and unsavory travel circumstances. And they often respond to these adverse situations in very human ways, like breaking down, shaking severely, becoming frantic in their behavior, and later suffering what might be recognized as exhaustion. They can also break out in rashes, lose their appetite, so much for eating like a pig, become neurotic, or simply collapse. They will also exhibit far greater incidence of other disease. This condition may affect only one pig, but it is not unusual for entire herds to exhibit these symptoms, and when they do, usually it will require some drastic improvements in living conditions, examination of diet, and pen space for them to get better. According to the chronicles of Richard Holland, they also respond well to 1 or 2 ounces a day of stabilized aloe vera drinking gel in their feed and in their water, about 1/2 gallon to every 100 gallons of water. Although no tangible measurement can be made of how effectively porcine stress syndrome has been reduced, we'd note that 2 indications are lessened occurrences of concomitant diseases and a dramatic weight gain in a short period of time. Greasy pig disease may be one of the most common offshoots of porcine stress syndrome and is a commonly occurring pathology that often crops up in litters of piglets. One piglet will exhibit the serum exudations that cover the skin and make them look self-descriptively greasy. Generally, other piglets will show the same symptoms as all, and it is commonly believed that much of this may be due to a mother who is stressed to begin with. When this condition occurs, these symptoms are very effectively treated by rubbing the young piglet with a stabilized aloe vera jelly compound, and all pigs, especially the mother, have daily doses of aloe vera drinking gel added to the food and water. Scours in piglets occur frequently and are just as threatening as scours among dairy and beef calves. The causes vary, however, since it is believed that at least one cause of pig scours is the result of a stressed or overwrought mother. Another, more sinister source is believed to be TGE, or transmittable gastroenteritis, and because it is contagious, can be passed on from one piglet to its litter mates like blitzkrieg. Richard Holland, in his treatment of scours in piglets, came up with a compound called allopectate, a combination of 50% aloe vera juice or gel and 50% pectin, in this case, kaopectate, administered in oral daily doses. So effective was this treatment that an 85% recovery rate was typical of dozens of cases of pig scours treated. With standard modalities of treatment, a 20% recovery might be expected. Sheep and goats. Prolifically raised in Texas and the southwestern United States, Sheep and goats are among the largest grown herd animals in other parts of the world. Many of them suffer from barnyard diseases similar to cattle, including scours and uterine infections. Particularly in the case of lamb scours, the frail young are thrust into a life-threatening situation within a short time of experiencing the disease. In the case of lamb scours, the young seem to respond to treatments of aloe vera drinking gel or juice infused into the mouth twice daily, as well as intramuscular injections of 5 cc of aloe vera. Sheep also experience occasional loss of energy due to improper feed, poor quality feed, or, as is often the case in the southwestern United States and Australia, due to drought. In such cases, it has been found by practitioners such as Diamond K Animal Care, when water is supplied to these animals, that it be augmented with quantities of aloe vera drinking gel, about 1 gallon per 300 gallons. The addition of aloe vera drinking gel to the water, by all indications, increases the sheep's appetite and assimilation of feed, and it provides added nutrients and needed minerals to the diet. Goats are often incorrectly referred to as the poor man's cow. In fact, since their milk, cheese, and butter are lactose-free, they are a godsend for people who wish to enjoy dairy products but exhibit a lactose intolerance or allergy to cow's milk, and they number in the millions. Goats are, pound for pound, perhaps the most prolific eaters in any barnyard and are notorious for their ravenous mealtime proclivities. Even though this is overstated, they are nonetheless plagued with a number of overeating diseases, including toxemia and bloat. Toxemia in goats can be the result of eating too much. More often, it is the result of improper feed given to young goats in the form of cattle feed laced with urea. Urea is perfectly acceptable for cows and steers to eat, but is highly toxic to goats. Usually when a goat starts taking large quantities of this stuff, it is quite capable of getting toxemia and dying from the occurrence. There are also occasions when a goat will consume some rather toxic elements. When this happens, it is a good practice to feed the animal large quantities of stabilized aloe vera, anywhere from a pint to a quart of drinking gel. It is also recommended that an infusion of aloe vera gel be used as a high enema to cleanse the digestive system of parasites. Bloat is an ailment suffered by just about every barnyard animal and is a common malady among goats. It is definitely the negative byproduct of overeating, especially from lush pasture grasses, and when this occurs, it can pose as much of a threat to the animal's life as it does to cows. Especially when the condition known as wet bloat occurs, the animals will be in more imminent danger, and infusions of aloe through a stomach tube as part of a flush are recommended. Usually, the ratio of one part aloe vera to four parts water is considered an effective flush or drench and helps to break up the frothy mass that forms the bloat. Dogs and cats. Although household pets take on a number of forms ranging from gerbils to pet pythons, we will focus on the more common variety and the ones about whom 95% of the questions are asked. Dogs, by the way, have now been superseded by cats as the number one popular pet in the country. This is perhaps due to the new working family who has less time to look after pets. In this case, the easy care independent cat may have the edge over the more dependent interactive canine, who can be somewhat childlike when it comes to having its needs tended. Nevertheless, the balance between the two remains pretty much equal, as does the number of internal and systemic pathologies that present themselves for treatment. Dogs. It is held as common in many holistic veterinary circles that a majority of ear infections can be systemic in origin and should be treated as such. This particularly applies to cases of otitis and chronic otitis. In such cases, a Northern California clinic specializing in holistic animal care services, has come up with an exceptional remedy that accounts for the successful treatment of more than 200 cases of chronic otitis. The modalities used are simultaneous treatment of the ears and skin, and when needed, the eyes, using an aloe vera gel and jelly in a conscientiously applied topical program. Additionally, the clinic recommends a strict change in diet from canned foods to all fresh foods, including some more complete complexes of natural grains, vegetables, and natural protein, and infusions of stabilized aloe vera gel into the drinking water. Hyperactivity and hyperkinetic behavior are systemic conditions that can be specific to certain breeds. Nonetheless, they can strike any dog, and when they do, some specific treatments are essential. As is now found to be the case with human beings, much can be laid at the table of the junk food diet. With that in mind, Richard Pitcairn, DVM, whose book Natural Health for Dogs and Cats should be a Bible for small pet practitioners, recommends a change of diet from canned and commercial foods to all natural foods, including large measures of natural grains and vegetables, and a natural herbal remedy. In his practice in treating this condition, Dr. Richard Holland also followed Dr. Pitcairn's routine of diet and herbal remedy, including vervain, valerian, and chamomile to help repair the nervous system and act as calming agents. He also added his own remedy, which included 1 to 3 ounces daily of aloe vera juice to help calm hysterical behavior and improve the disposition of the dog. Although there is no specificity of data to clinically measure this kind of success, Dr. Holland reported over 80 cases in which the overall health and dispositions of the dogs were markedly improved as a result of this kind of regimen. Canine parvo is a pathology in veterinary circles whose very name is enough to strike terror in any home with dogs in it. Like rabies or distemper, once it strikes the animal, it is almost invariably a killer. And once it gains its hold, there is usually little that can be done to cure it. There are currently some good vaccines against canine parvo, but unlike rabies and distemper, whose immunizations are 98% effective, parvovirus vaccines are only sporadically effective in preventing the incidence of the disease. Similar in some of its symptomatic manifestations to feline distemper, canine parvo presents itself initially as an intestinal virus, then quickly transforms itself through other manifestations such as high fever, nausea, chronic diarrhea, intestinal hemorrhaging, and severe dehydration. Once these manifestations seize the host body, particularly young puppies will succumb in short order unless something is done quickly. Frankly, that something is almost always too little too late. And yet there are several case history studies in which systemic infusions and injections with stabilized aloe vera in combination with other modalities did actually turn the condition around. In one such instance, Dr. Alan Fredrickson was confronted with a litter of 8 German Shepherd puppies, all of whom had canine parvo. Administering large doses of aloe vera gel through a rectal injection along with regular oral doses, Dr. Fredrickson was able to save 6 of the 8 puppies. In applying this treatment regime, he acknowledged that the aloe, powerful healant though he thought it to be, needed adjunctive therapy in the form of special nutrient fluids and electrolyte solutions to help replenish the dehydrated pups. Dr. Fredrickson also acknowledged the fact that had he kept up the aloe vera regimen longer, he might have saved all 8 of the puppies. In its treatment lists, the Holland Veterinary Clinic listed more than 100 cases of canine parvovirus treated successfully using modalities in which aloe vera was the treatment of choice. As had been the occasions of use among other practitioners, Dr. Holland used high enemas with stabilized aloe vera gel in an equal half-half solution with catalyst water. He would then follow that treatment with oral doses of 1 ounce of aloe vera juice or drinking gel every hour for large dogs, every 2 hours for smaller dogs, until the situation improved. Fortunately, some new vaccines have now been introduced that appear to be more effective in the treatment of canine parvo. Nevertheless, in those instances in which the condition does manifest, there are good indications that it can be treated successfully with stabilized aloe vera and friends. Toxemia, as in the case of goats and other animals, indicates a general poisoning of the body system, either through the direct intake of toxins or contaminated tissue. In fact, dogs, even more frequently than goats, get cases of toxemia, probably because they are carnivores, and many more toxins can be found in contaminated meat than perhaps any other form of ingestion. When these conditions do occur, they are usually presented to the veterinarian at a late hour or an emergency basis when the dog is too far into the syndrome to be saved. In these cases, a number of emergency procedures may be tried. One put into practice by Dr. Richard Holland involved massive doses of aloe vera juice taken to detoxify the system. In this case, the recommended dosage is 1 ounce an hour, every hour taken orally for 2 days. This treatment regime was undertaken in 9 cases of toxemia, and in each case the dog survived and saw its condition improve dramatically. Cats. Cats are beset with perhaps as many systemic illnesses as any creature in the animal kingdom. Many of them, we observe, seem to be the direct result of their proximity to the high-tech, high-stress world of human beings and their offerings of synthetic diets, processed foods, and environmental toxins. Many of these diseases also come as the result of human misunderstandings of their true needs in nature and the failure to recognize the differences between dogs and cats and other animals. One of the most common maladies to plague cats is a syndrome called cystitis. Broadly defined, it is an inflammation of the bladder, but like all broad definitions, this is an oversimplification. More often than not, cystitis is accompanied by dark red or brown and sometimes thick urine, painful or slow urination, and stones, all of which are brought on by the presence of a virus or bacteria. If caught early enough, cystitis can be treated by catheterizing the cat, accompanied by doses of antibiotics and the use of anti-inflammatory agents. Aloe vera serves well in fulfilling both the latter functions and may be used in conjunction with antibiotics or as an antibacterial agent on its own. In his veterinary practice, Dr. Alan Fredrickson found that oral doses of aloe vera gel or juice at a level of 5 cc 3 times a day with a urine acidifier Curacao has worked very successfully to help clear out the effects of the disease. Dr. Richard Holland, too, used oral doses of aloe in highly different variations, 1 to 2 ounces twice daily until the symptoms cleared up. In both cases, one of the major offshoots of this aloe vera therapy was that it seemed to prevent the recurrence of the condition. Preventing recurrence, or better still, an occurrence of the syndrome, seems now to be a matter of education. In fact, there is a growing contingent of veterinarians who believe that diet is one of the principal culprits, and that especially among tomcats, a large portion of the blame can be directed toward the intake of dry commercial cat food. Since by physiodynamic makeup, cats are descendants of desert hunters, they still get most of their liquid intake from the blood and juices of animal flesh. Since dry commercial cat food contains no natural fluids and most are laced with preservatives, they can ultimately be hazardous to a cat's health, especially if taken over long periods of time. It has also been recently determined that red meat tuna, such as that found in most commercial cat foods, is exceptionally high in ash and magnesium. And these are two elements that, in too high a quantity, are hazardous to our feline friends. Best bet: feed cats live foods and lots of fresh organ meats, some vegetables, no more than 30%, and go easy on the water. Cats by nature have trouble processing this stuff, and any cat who drinks a lot of water is probably giving you a preview of a bladder or kidney complication that will crop up sooner rather than later. Feline leukemia virus, FLV, FADES, and FIPS. All health-related syndromes and somewhat interactive, they in fact spell DEATH for the cat in pretty short order if left untreated. FLV is, with improved vaccination techniques, now acknowledged to be highly preventable and is certainly recommended that any cat old enough to receive vaccinations get both the booster and follow-up shots as soon as is physically possible. The challenge with feline leukemia, like FIPS or feline infectious peritonitis, is that both are highly contagious and often transmitted from male to male during tom fights over territory. Since no cat who ventures outside is immune to the occasional wayward claw or fang, the potential spread of these syndromes is inevitable. Perhaps the most dramatic and certainly the best documented work involving these rather sinister syndromes has to have been the studies of Drs. McAnally and McDaniel in treating FLV and FADE-stricken cats with Carison, Ace Manin. In treatments of dozens of cases and several cases of rhinotracheitis, the McAnally-McDaniel research group found that the Ace Manin brought the effective cats in dramatic stages of recovery in over 85% of the cases treated. In fact, so effective is this treatment that the FDA has approved Ace Manin as an injection by prescription for this and other veterinary applications.